The following program is created for informational purposes only and does not constitute as medical advice. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the host. If you think you may have a medical emergency, consult your doctor.
This is where the healing begins.
This is Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne of Greenwood Family Chiropractic, where it's not only about neck and back pain, but a place for whole body wellness. Listen this hour as Dr. Leanne is here to share her wellness education to help you live a maximized life. For more information, visit GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Good morning. Thanks for joining. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today we are talking about heart health. We're going to break down the type of lipoproteins. So LDL, HDL, VLDL, lipoprotein A, because I feel as if so often we talk about cholesterol and someone will come to me and say, I have high cholesterol, you know, and you're like, now what? And the standard allopathic thought process behind it is you should take a statin, when in reality, it wasn't a lack of statin that caused the high cholesterol, but there's a reason why your cholesterol is high. So if you're one of those individuals who says, hey, I just went to the doctor recently and my cholesterol was high, what should I do and should I take a statin? No, first and foremost, I can't tell you whether or not to take a statin. That's between you and your medical provider. But I can tell you my thought process on statins, their mechanism, and why I personally would not be taking them. So before we dive down deep into all of that, let's talk about some news.
Dr. Leanne's Health News.
Some studies suggest that too much sugar can literally mess with the brain.
Health News now, one of the world's most commonly prescribed medications.
Today, the average American consumes 22 teaspoons of sugar a day.
Protesters say they just should not be forced to get this shot, not by the government.
For today's health in the news, popular medications could change your gut health for years. So this goes on to talk about how research links antibiotics, antidepressant, and other drugs to long-term microbiome effects. So some everyday medication could be impacting your gut health for the long term. A large study from Estonia has found that the gut microbiome, or the microbiome is like the ecosystem that lives inside of your intestines, can be reshaped by antibiotics. This is according to a new research study published in ASM journals. Other medicines like antidepressant and cold could also change the bacteria in your gut. These effects can build up over time and may even last for years after taking the drugs. So the study analyzed stool samples from 2,509 individuals, linking their microbiome data with electronic health records containing up to 5 years of prescription history. A second stool study was collected from a sub-cohort of 328 individuals about 4.4 years later. So the research investigated which drugs were associated with microbiome change. We also kind of call this in more of like the medical community dysbiosis. That's where that bacteria is not with proper levels, if you will. So the researchers investigated which drugs were associated with microbiome changes, whether the amount or duration of use strengthened these impacts, and what happened to a patient when a drug was started or discontinued. Of the 186 drugs that were tested, 167, so 89.8%, were linked to at least one microbial effect. Even when taken years before the study, many drugs still had an association with microbiome variation, including antibiotics, psycholeptics, antidepressants, proton pump inhibitors, PPI, beta blockers, and benzodiazepine derivatives, the research found. For some drugs, more frequent or longer past use was associated with a stronger disturbance in the microbiome, suggesting that these effects accumulate over time. The study also found that starting and stopping certain medications, particularly PPIs, again, proton pump inhibitors, SSRIs, which are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So PPIs are often used for acid reflux. SSRIs are used for anxiety and depression. And antibiotics could cause microbiome shifts. So senior medical analyst Dr. Mark Siegel shared the old saying, you are what you eat. It may turn out that you are what medications you take too, he said in regards to the new study. Siegel noted that these findings are, quote, not surprising, since the gut flora is fragile and can, quote, easily be altered by chemicals. He said if you have a short and long-term implication for a metabolic process, not only the health of the GI system, but also the brain, because of direct links between the gut and the brain via the vagus nerve. This is so interesting to be able to find this. I was chatting with a patient this week, and he had done a stool test, and he said, I feel so much better. Like, yes, I know, like, of course, but he's like, I feel better. And honestly, my mood is so much better. And I was like, yes, because, you know, a lot of the mood regulators, serotonin, dopamine, are created in the GI, the gut. And how they get from the gut to the brain is the vagus nerve. So I was like, yep, it makes sense. The study obviously pointed out a few limitations in the research, including the fact that it focused on prescription-based drugs and did not consider any of the over-the-counter medication. So basically what they're saying is, of course, there's more research to be done and whatnot. But I mean, it would make sense that if you say, hey, I'm taking an antibiotic. Anti is against, bio is life. Antibiotic, it kills off things that are alive. That includes good healthy cells, right? We use it for bacteria, not viruses. Remember, we don't use antibiotic for viruses. But so I think it's just one that's really interesting that you're like, well, yeah, it's going to, the bacteria that's in your gut, that's supposed to be in there. And it's supposed to be really good and healthy. But same thing too, when you have like something like a proton pump inhibitor, oftentimes when it reduces that, it'll cause less acidity in the stomach, which if you have acid reflux, you might think would be a good thing. But when you create less acid in the stomach, the reason why our stomach is so acidic is because that design is to naturally kill off the bacteria in the GI system from the food that we eat before it reaches the intestines. And that's where you'll see oftentimes like an overgrowth of bad bacteria, or, you know, more often than not, when we do stool tests, I'll see individuals who, you know, have taken a probiotic for years and years and years at a time. And now because they've basically over inoculated, they just keep taking more and more and more and more. And although they are good, now they're good at a volume that have made them not advantageous, right? Like those are ones that now are problematic because you have too much bacteria. And when you have too much bacteria, sugar and yeast end up fermenting, and that's where people get really gassy. So all in all, I just thought it was really interesting is that, you know, even the medical community now is looking more specifically at different medications. Now, again, medicine has a time and a place. You're like, you know, someone had come in and I was like, it looks like a systemic infection, which warrants not just oral antibiotics, but likely IV antibiotics. And I remember her saying, I don't think I'm going to go because I've been doing so good with my gut and like gut healing. And I remember saying, respectfully, the microbiome of your gut will not matter if you are dead. Like, medicine has a time and a place. This is a time that you go in, you take all the oral antibiotics, you do all the IV bana. If you have a systemic infection that could likely turn septic, then you could die. And that's the bigger of the two problems. Like, we can fix and heal the gut, but that's one where, you know, if it's looking at. But a lot of the times, you know, those antibiotics are like, oh, you've got a sniffle or a cold. Here's an antibiotic. Oh, you got some acid reflux. And no one wants to evaluate maybe how you've been eating, what the food that you've been consuming that might be eliciting more of that acid reflux would be. They're just like, nope, here's a PPI. But in reality, you're like, does it solve a problem or does it create a different one? And so that's just when we know popular medications change your gut health, gut and brain have a very big connection altogether. So just some food for thought, if you will. So when we get back, people talk a lot about the different types of cholesterols, HDL, LDLs, lipoprotein A's. What do they mean? I'll help explain more next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today we are talking about heart health. More specifically, we're going to dive down deep into understanding cholesterol. The big picture of cholesterol, what it is and why it can increase. We're going to talk about the type of lipoproteins. So when we say lipoproteins, we're talking about LDL. So if you didn't know, LDL stands for low density lipoproteins. HDL stands for high density lipoproteins. So I think a lot of the times, you know, triglycerides, we're going to talk about those. Not necessarily a lipoprotein in terms of triglyceride. But we're going to talk about like what does it mean? We're going to talk about LDL particle size, some natural strategies to improve quality. But I think first and foremost, we really have to get down to talking about like what is cholesterol? Because that's just when you're like, I don't know, but it's high. So I think the one question that serves to be answered and that the average person asks is, what is cholesterol, right? So cholesterol is a soft, waxy substance that is majorly made in the liver. So about 80% is made in the liver. It travels in the blood as kind of primarily LDLs and HDLs. Now, this is one where, gosh, there's a reason why we have cholesterol. And I think we just measure cholesterol to see if it's high because we've been taught that high cholesterol causes heart disease. But there's a lot of other aspects that come to when we have that. Now, no, if I am not your doctor, currently, if I do not see you at Greenwood Family Chiropractic, I'm just a doctor to you. I'm not your doctor. So I always recommend you ask your doctor for opinions. But I will say this, cholesterol is vital for your health. And that's something I feel like is glazed over and missed quite a bit in terms of the importance or the benefits of cholesterol. So that first and foremost is one of the things that I do want to talk about because our one concern is just if it's high, it causes cardiovascular disease, which there is some question about that. But again, we'll kind of dive down deeper into that as we go. But Let's talk about what cholesterol does, what its responsibilities are, and what it's supposed to do. So first and foremost, one of the things that I think is incredibly important to touch base on is cholesterol and its role in hormone production. So cholesterol is the backbone molecule for all steroid hormones. So it is converted into pregnenolone, often called the mother hormone, but it branches off into several critical pathways. So one of them is cortisol, right? Glucocorticoid is the hormone class that needs cholesterol as a building block. An example of that is cortisol, right? So it helps regulate stress responses, blood sugar, and inflammation. When you look at another hormone class that cholesterol is responsible for is mineral corticoids. So aldosterone controls sodium and potassium balance, and it also regulates blood pressure. I think that's important. Yes, hormones can help regulate blood pressure. Sex hormones. I feel like this is the one that people often feel the most, if you will. So estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And I want to say that twice because I do feel like I don't want to gloss over that aspect and how important it is. Specifically, sex hormones. Cholesterol is a backbone molecule for steroid hormones, including sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. So obviously, reproductive health, mood, energy, muscle mass, menstrual regulation for females. And so we look so oftentimes when I have a male who comes in and says, hey, I'm just not feeling myself and I got my testosterone checked and my testosterone's low. I'm like, okay. So my next question then is, are you on a statin? And I think people think that that's weird because they think testosterone and high cholesterol are not put together as the same, but they are. Reason being is because when you take a statin that decreases your cholesterol, right? And we're like praising ourselves, 120, 130, your numbers look so good. You are robbing your body's ability to utilize that cholesterol to build sex hormones. So then we're like, oh, no big deal. Let's just take some like a testosterone, right? We'll put in a little pellet and call it a day. And you're like, why is your testosterone low? Like, is it because you have a bunch of belly fat and your body is turning testosterone into estrogen in a process called aromatization, right? Is it something that you're eating too much sugar, your body can't produce it? Is it something that you're not exercising, so your body is not trying to naturally produce testosterone? Is it something that your cholesterol is so incredibly low that your body can't build those sex hormones appropriately? You know, and another one too is vitamin D. Yes, vitamin D is technically a hormone. Fun fact, UVB rays from the sun. So UVB rays from the sun, when they hit your skin, is what turns vitamin D or cholesterol into vitamin D. Sun turns cholesterol into vitamin D. But we have been just brought up to say, hey, you know what? If you go outside, you know, the first thing you should do is put on a UV protectant, right? Make it so your body can't absorb UV rays, UVA, UVB. And we do that with a process called sunscreen, right? No one is encouraging you to go out and burn and fry like a crisp, but there's a reason why, you know, once it becomes spring, when my kids are outside, I'm like, take your shirts off. You know, if they're in the backyard, I'm like, take your pants off. Like, I want their skin to have sunshine. Yep. Synthesis from 7-D hydrocholesterol in the skin via UVB exposure. That's what regulates calcium balance, immune system function, bone metabolism. You know, again, oftentimes patients in the office will say, hey, I'm concerned because I have osteopenia or osteoporosis. And the first question I ask them is, what is their vitamin D level? And they think it's so odd, but your body can't absorb calcium without vitamin D. So again, from a hormone production standpoint, cholesterol is the backbone molecule for these hormones. Number two, it is incredibly important for cell membrane structure. So Cholesterol actually sits between a phospholipid and the cell membranes, making it flexible yet stable. So it very much can help ensure for like, so lipid is fat by is two. So it's like the outer covering inside of a cell. It's what allows really good nutrients in. It's what allows toxicity out. So proper signaling, nutrient transport, and nerve conduction is part of that cell membrane structure. Here's what's really important too. It's especially concentrated in the brain and the nerve cells. So forming about 25% of your body's cholesterol in its brain and nerve cells. The brain alone contains 20% of your body's cholesterol. Your brain is a really big clump of fatty cholesterol. And so I always wonder what that means when we're touting these incredibly low lab values, when it was like, but our brain needs that. Right. And I always say I'm always so interested to see memory care facilities and what they look like in, you know, 20, 30 years now that we're back on eating fat bombs and avocados and just feeding our brain these good, healthy fats. The other aspect, too, is cholesterol is a core component of the myelin sheath. So the myelin sheath is a fatty insulating layer around the nerves. So think about it as kind of like a freeway. It allows rapid electrical conduction and protects against neurodegeneration. Let me repeat, myelin protects against neurodegeneration. Cholesterol is a core component of the myelin sheath. So this is very much one, low cholesterol or overuse of statins can very much impair nerve function and cognition in people. It also, in the liver, cholesterol is converted into bile acids. These acids are stored in the gallbladder and released into the intestines to help emulsify fat and aid in absorption for fat-soluble vitamins, like A, D, E, and K. Those are the four fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, and K. People always want to say, in order to absorb D, you need K. You need fat because it is a fat-soluble vitamin. Again, with vitamin D synthesis, as well as lipoproteins for transport. So cholesterol is packed in lipoproteins. So think lipoproteins, LDL, HDLs, are just kind of the delivery mechanisms. So LDL delivers cholesterol to the tissue for hormone production and repair. HDLs return the excess cholesterol to the liver for recycling and elimination. That is often times where most people will say that's why LDLs are the quote bad and HDLs are the quote good cholesterol. In my personal opinion, there's no good or bad cholesterol. It's just your body doing the right thing at the right time. You know, we just, the allopathic model sees a little bit more of like LDL is bad because it's bringing it to the damaged tissue where HDL returns it to the liver. And then we'll kind of talk about how to increase your HDLs specifically. So there are tissue repair, regeneration, healing. There's a multitude of reasons why it's so incredibly important to have cholesterol. But I think the other aspect too is it's like, well, if it's so important to have cholesterol, why does my doctor say cholesterol is bad if my body makes it? And it's really not just cholesterol, it's really oxidation and inflammation. But here's what happens. Let's talk about cholesterol and how that mechanism happens. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Maximize Your Life, I'm Dr. Leanne. So what happens is you have a blood vessel, right? I mean, technically you have lots of blood vessels, but for this, we just have one. And there has to be something that damages the arterial wall. So it could be, you know, smoking, chemical, pharmaceuticals. It could be bad fats. It could be sugar. It could be, right? All of these different things kind of damages, or for lack of better terminology, nicks that arterial wall, causes damage there. And the body, because we're so smart, says, how do we get this to heal? Because, you know, obviously having that damage to the artery wall, it causes like a bit of inflammation. The body says, oh my gosh, let's bring some cholesterol there. This good, fatty, waxy substance. And we're just going to put it right on there. It's your body's healing mechanism. And then over time, you know, obviously it can't, like our bodies almost can't have it where it's like a scab that it falls off. So what they do is it puts kind of tissue over there. And that's what atherosclerosis is, right? It just, they consider it hardening of the artery walls. But that's one where we look and you're like, your body's doing the right thing at the right time. But then we look at, okay, if it's too high, is that problematic? And typically, you know, there's no doubt that decreasing, there's no question, there's no doubt that taking a statin will decrease your cholesterol. The problem is that it is almost impossible to find because it doesn't happen, is that, you know, we do reduce cholesterol because we say high cholesterol causes cardiovascular related events, right? We want to be heart healthy. But people who have lower cholesterol on statins don't necessarily have a lower risk of mortality. So yes, your cholesterol is lower, but your risk of mortality is just as high as the patients who have maybe higher or quote high cholesterol. And so I think we just have to evaluate what could be causing, because you can say, hey, let's take a statin, let's decrease my cholesterol. But number one, let's figure out what is causing raised cholesterol. Is this something that's causing, is coming, or is it increasing from eggs and butter? But then two, what is it that statins actually do to your body? And we'll talk about that more next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. Videos, tips, deals, and more. Find Greenwood Family Chiropractic on Instagram. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today we are talking about cholesterol. I think it's one that, you know, if you're going to do labs annually at your doctor, they are likely doing a lipid panel. And they're probably looking at cholesterol. And what I have found is that the average person will say, oh no, my numbers looked bad. And you say to your standard medical doctor, what do I do? And they say, you should be on a statin. And a statin is a cholesterol lowering medication. The mechanism of that is that it stops the production of cholesterol in your liver. So it doesn't necessarily address why your liver is doing the right thing at the right time to create more cholesterol. And we'll talk a little bit more about what you could be doing from a lifestyle related issue that could be causing it. But that's one where it's like, hey, I don't want to be on it. Here's a really great example. I was in college. So quite a few years ago. And I was giving blood. And I remember going into, like, you know, I think they called it like the union where all of our mailboxes were. And I had a note in there. It wasn't like a letter. It was a note. And it said, hey, you know, thank you so much for donating blood, but also wanted to let you know that we like tested your blood and your cholesterol is high. You need to go see your doctor. So I remember going home, going to my mom, and she was like, oh yeah, well, like, you know, I have high cholesterol. Your grandpa has high cholesterol. Like, it's just in our family. But in reality, what's interesting now, because fast forward like 20, 22 years later, my cholesterol is very much in the normal range. But the lifestyle choices that I'm making now in terms of eating right and exercising and supplementation and alcohol, like, were slightly different when I was between the ages of 18 and 21 in college. You know, like, I was making college choices as a college kid and they weren't really focused on health and wellness, if you will, you know? So it was like, yeah, I was eating stuff from the cafeteria, which wasn't great fats. And again, we'll kind of break down what to look for and some actionable steps to change. But I was just making poor lifestyle choices, and that showed in my labs, because now I'm making better lifestyle choices. And if anything, I have 20 years to have more damage, but I don't. And interestingly enough, my mom, who, you know, lived a good majority of her life also with just high cholesterol, not on statins, now has kind of implemented some of the things that I teach. Which sounds like a duh, but, you know, if you know anything about family and health, you know they're the hardest, you know, but they don't listen very well. But those are ones where, like, now over the course of less than a year, her cholesterol has naturally dropped over 100 points. And it's just by making lifestyle changes. And so those are ones where, you know, statins, in my personal opinion, aren't necessarily the best solution for me or my family, just because I look at, your brain needs cholesterol. So you're robbing your brain, you're robbing your hormones. But then two, inevitably, you can't take a pharmaceutical drug and tell an organ to stop working, like your liver, and then think that your liver is going to work to serve other purposes. So an example of this is that, you know, you have glycogen that's stored in your liver, so excess sugar. So your body innately says, hey, if there's too much sugar, I got to escort it somewhere else to use that. And it's like, well, the liver will take care of it. And you're like, no, it won't. Not anymore. You want to know why? Because you told your liver to stop working when you started taking that statin drug. And so now that's one where, fast forward, people who are on a statin for a couple years, all of a sudden, now their fasting blood sugar starts to increase. Now their A1C starts to increase. And they think, gosh, I've been doing the same thing all along. I'm sure you might have been. But you're taking a pharmaceutical that's telling an organ system to stop working, so it's not working. It's not doing any of its jobs properly, which is often, too, why if you look at labs like a comprehensive metabolic panel, you'll see ALT and AST are raising, which are your liver enzymes. So your liver is now trying to work. It's still trying to do its job. It's trying so hard, but you have this pharmaceutical that's telling it not to work. And now it's trying to work so hard just to do things like clean the blood like it's supposed to, right? Like the way it was designed. Because guess what? If you shut down an organ system, it still has to work to function, because you know what happens if your liver doesn't work? You die. That's why people get liver transplants, right? But instead, we're just like, we're not going to turn it off all the way. We're just going to cut its ability to process pretty substantially. You know, and that's where I see a lot of the times too, people will bring in their labs and say, doctor said everything looked great. And I said, have they addressed the fact that you have high liver enzymes? And they'll say no. And I'm like, well, I mean, that's something to pay attention to, because your liver is actively not working properly. So I think that's just one to be able to look at. I think the other aspect, my very unapologetically not favorite thing, you know, if you listen to there's a medical doctor, his name is Dr. Jack Wolfson, he's also known as the paleo cardiologist, he is one who says it should be illegal for a medical doctor to prescribe a patient a statin and not also immediately put them on CoQ10. Reason being is because when you look at the mechanism of action of a statin drug, it inhibits the body's ability to create CoQ10. Now, CoQ10 is basically the battery pack inside of a cell. So you think each cell has a purpose that it needs to serve. In order to serve that purpose, it needs energy. That energy is ATP, right? What happens is, in order to fuel up that battery, it needs energy. That energy comes from CoQ10, which is why the thing that people feel the most is muscle weakness or muscle aches. And because your muscles need to work and move and contract and do all of the things, that is, it's a very tangible, right? Like, I remember my dad had started and he was on it for maybe a month or two. And he's like, I could barely get up the stairs without having to stop like 5 or 10 stairs in because my legs hurt so bad. And I said, well, yeah, you feel that. But like, what about the cells you don't feel, right? Your muscles are struggling. But then two, you also have to think about, guess what your heart is? A muscle. I think the other aspect too of statin drugs that are noteworthy, is neuropathy, specifically polyneuropathy, also known as peripheral neuropathy, characterized by weakness, tingling, and pain in the hands and feet, as well as difficulty walking. So what's interesting is that researchers who studied about 500,000 residents of Denmark, about 9% of the country's population, found that people who take statins were more likely to develop neuropathy. Taking a statin for 1 year raised the risk of nerve damage by about 15%, about one case in every 2,200 patients. For those who took statins for two or more years, the additional risk rose by 26%. And so, according to the research of Dr. Gollum, nerve problems are a common side effect from statin use. Patients who use statins for two or more years are at a 4 to 14-fold increased risk of developing idiopathic polyneuropathy compared to controls. And so, again, heart failure is another one, because it interferes with the production of CoQ10 by statin drugs, and the heart is a muscle and it can't work properly. And so just, again, cognitive impair, we're looking at all of these different pancreatitis. But just in general, we're like, but it gets the number down. But you're like, there's still a cause. And in reality, I think the biggest aspect is people would say, hey, I'm going to take this lipid lowering treatment, cholesterol lowering drug, because I want to live longer, right? ALHAT, which is the hypertensive and lipid lowering treatment to prevent heart attack trial, is the largest North American cholesterol lowering trial ever, showed that the mortality of treatment groups and control groups after 3 or 6 years were identical. And again, heart protection study out of Oxford University, PROSPER, again, a perspective on prevostatin and the elderly at risk, again, showed just different aspects in terms of similar for stroke myocardial infarcts. Prevostatin did not reduce total myocardial infarcts or total stroke in the primary prevention population. So just like those aspects that you're like, I would take it to live longer. And you're like, but it's saying it's that, you know, if you have cholesterol at 240 or 140 on a statin, you would think 140 on a statin, you'd live longer. But that's most of these studies, when you're looking, total mortality was not significantly reduced. And so I think it really goes to show you like what's the looking more at like the cause. So again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter. So let's talk about the different types of cholesterol, right? Because I think that's one that is important. So LDLs, also known as, quote, the, you know, bad cholesterol. Again, that's one that transports fat to the artery wall. That's why people will view it as bad, if you will. But you always got to think, is the LDL high because the body is repairing damage or because clearance is low? So that's the other aspect too, is that, you know, cholesterol is utilized and then cleared through the liver. And so oftentimes when we've got this slow, sludgy detoxification, phase 1, phase 2 detoxification problems, well, of course your body's creating this cholesterol, but it can't clear it properly. So when you look at like LDLs and why it could be high, liver overproduction. So when cells are inflamed or they need repair, cholesterol is shipped out to patch the damage. I think this is an important aspect to look at large picture, is that low thyroid function slows LDL receptor activity. And so there's less LDLs cleared from the blood. Insulin resistance and high sugar intake is one that I see quite a bit. Low antioxidant status, so supporting vitamin C, vitamin E, CoQ10. Because what happens is if you have low antioxidant status, it oxidizes LDLs, and oxidized LDL persists longer throughout the blood. HDL, right? HDL, you want to be high. This usually is one that reflects really great. Majority of that will... you get from good, healthy fats. And that's one where not all fats are created equal. Triglycerides and LDLs. Triglycerides specifically, I think, is noteworthy. That is caused from an excess carbohydrate or sugar intake. Liver converts it to sugar. Liver converts sugar to triglycerides. And so alcohol especially beer, wine, sugary cocktails, liver stress, fatty liver, low omega-3s, but excessive carbohydrate and sugar intake. Carbohydrates, so we're talking breads and pastas and, you know, waffles and pancakes and potatoes and corn. And you're like, but those are vegetables or carbohydrate vegetables, right? And so we're doing it over and over and over again. Those things damage the artery walls. Low omega-3, I think, takes into account, one, is that we're not eating good fatty fish. But on top of that, we're so over-inflamed with toxic omega-3s. Toxic omega-6s. So then as well, you have VLDL. VLDL are very low density lipoproteins. VLDL carries triglycerides from the liver to the tissue. So it's high when the liver is overloaded again with sugar, alcohol, or insulin. Insulin is what is in the blood trying to get the sugar out of the blood. This is oftentimes seen in someone who has non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. I see this a lot. Like, I had a woman and she was not overweight. She was in her mid to late 40s. This was in the last couple of months, mid to late 40s, and came in and she was like, oh my gosh, I got my labs back. Here's what they say. And I looked and I said, you know, do you drink? And she said, no. And I said, do you take a lot of over-the-counter pain medication? She said, no. I said, you are on different medication. And she named one that wouldn't, it's not metabolized through the liver. I'm like, no. And I was like, it sounds like you have too much sugar. What happens is your sugar packs it around. And so this fatty liver lessens the fat packs around your liver and lessens your body's ability to function properly. Your body, if it has sugar in excess, will store it as fat. It's your body's defense mechanism, right? And so we're like, oh no. And that's what I should talk about, is that we talk about when someone's like, yes, good fats, bad fats. I'm not going to have saturated fat. I'm not going to have avocado. I'm not going to have coconut, right? Because saturated fat increases cholesterol. And I want to share with you that that is a huge myth. And you would say, nope, that is what the, you know, American Health Association goes off of. But here's what's really interesting. And you're like, where did that even come from? And here's where it comes from. So back in the 1950s, there was a hypothesis by Ansel Keys, A-N-C-E-L, Ansel Keys. And he was an American physiologist who came up with this saturated fat hypothesis. So he proposed, this is 1950, that eating saturated fat from like butter, eggs, meat, dairy, raised serum blood cholesterol. So eating saturated fat increased blood cholesterol. And that high cholesterol blocked arteries and caused heart disease. So this became known as the diet heart hypothesis. And part of this all came from this publication. The study went from 1958 to 1970. And what he published was the 7-country study. And what this study suggested was that the countries eating more animal fat and more saturated fat had the higher risk of heart disease. So, and this is what the study that heavily influences American Heart Association and the U.S. dietary guidelines starting in the 1960s. It led to the promotion of low-fat diets, vegetable and seed oil instead of butter and lard, and carbohydrate-based diets as, quote, heart healthy. Which is why in like the 80s, you know, fat-free was considered healthy. But this is where there was a huge increase in obesity, diabetes, heart disease, all climbed massively after this. And so here's where that hypothesis was incredibly flawed. Is that so? Keys selected 7 countries, right? It was considered the 7-country study. It's literally what he called it, the 7-country study. And it fit in. And so when you look at it, it was just this perfectly linear graph of these countries that the more saturated fat that they consumed orally, that they ate, there was a direct increase to heart disease. The problem is that in that study, he actually looked at 22 countries. But because those 22 countries, like France, Germany, Switzerland, countries that have a higher fat diet but lower rates of heart disease did not actually coincide with the desire of that study, they were excluded. So when all 22 countries were later analyzed, we had realized that the correlation had disappeared. Most researchers will look and say that was no more than just fraud. And there are larger meta-analyses that I've done now that counter-indicate. Large meta-analysis. American Journal of Clinical Nutrition published in 2010. The Annals Internal Medicine published in 2014 found, quote, no significant evidence that saturated fat increased the risk of coronary heart disease or cardiovascular disease. Right? So when you're like, I'm not going to eat saturated fat, it's not the saturated fat that's the problem necessarily. Let's talk about what the true culprits are. Number one is refined sugars and starches. So insulin resistance, it increases small density LDLs. Those are ones that you have to look at sugars and things that turn into sugar. So specifically carbohydrates, white refined carbohydrates. Number two, oxidized seed oil, canola, corn, soybean, vegetable oil, all very, very rancid oxidized oil that increase inflammation and cause endothelial damage. Endothelia being the damage to the tissue inside of the artery wall. Another one, low nutrient intake, low antioxidants lead to a higher LDL. And then chronic stress and poor sleep, higher levels of cortisol, triglycerides. So, you know, when you're looking at good, healthy fats, coconut oil, grass-fed butter, avocado oil, olive oil, don't cook it, fatty fish, really good, healthy meats. So there are time and time again that we can do really, really great, healthy things for our body, but we do truly need to look at what are we consuming from a like rancid, toxic fat? What's our stress like? What sugar are we eating? I see this so often, is that we are creating this damage to the artery wall. It's not a lack of statins. It is more specifically the damage that is happening inside of the cells. So that's just one overall that when you're looking at cholesterol, there are a lot of actionable things that you can do. It's just getting more down to the root cause of the problem. So, you know, I'm sure that kind of answers some questions and it likely elicits several more, but this is why we do what we do at Greenwood Family Chiropractic. 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Thank you so much for tuning in. Look forward to next week, but always remember that your power is on.